Hello, and welcome back to the Live, Learn, and Play podcast. We here at Arkansas Children's are hoping you and your family are staying safe during this unprecedented time. We also wanted to say how grateful we are to all of the healthcare workers who are on the front lines and who continue to be heroes for the patients and families they are serving. We are so thankful for you more than ever. On today's episode of the Live, Learn, and Play podcast, we sit down with Dr. Karen Farst, Medical Director of Children at Risk at Arkansas Children's, and Dr. Nicholas Long, Director of Pediatric Psychology at Arkansas Children's, to discuss the psychological effects on children during the COVID-19 outbreak and the potential for rising abuse cases in Arkansas during this time. We know that this subject is a little bit more heavy, but this type of information is so vital for our mission here at Arkansas Children's of making children better today and healthier tomorrow. As always, please subscribe to the Live, Learn, and Play podcast wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. Now, here's Dr. Long and Dr. Farst. Welcome back to the Live, Learn, and Play podcast. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Karen Farst. She's our medical director for Team for Children at Risk at Arkansas Children's, and Dr. Nicholas Long. He is our director of pediatric psychology at Arkansas Children's.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
It's great to be here today to share some thoughts that we hope will be helpful to families.
This month, it's April, and it's Child Abuse Prevention Month. And as champions for children at Arkansas Children's, this is a heavier topic, but one that we need to discuss, especially given the current situation with COVID-19 crisis that we are in. And so we turn to these two experts to talk about families during this tense situation and making sure that children are safe at home. So, Dr. Long, we're first going to start with you, and if you could first address what's happening with families from a mental and an emotional point of view that are at home during this crisis. What is happening at home?
Well, there's no doubt that this is an extremely stressful time for everyone, and especially stressful for parents. They're concerned about their own health and well-being, the health and well-being of their children and family members. And no one's quite sure where this is all going. So there's a lot of unknowns, and that creates a lot of anxiety. So one of the things that we know is that this is stressful. So that's normal. I think what we need to be aware of and parents need to be aware of is when that stress starts causing difficulties within the families. You know, what are those signs you need to look for? And I think one of the things is when you start seeing changes in your personality or personality of others in your family, there's a lot more irritability, maybe some tearfulness, excessive anxiety and concern. And when that's the case, you really try to, as a parent, model calmness. Because, you know, as a parent, your children are going to really look at you to determine how worried they need to be about this situation. And it's not what you say as much as what they see. So they need to see you as being as calm and confident as possible in this crisis or in any crisis. Because if they see their parent as being in control, then they tend to worry a lot less.
Okay, so you mentioned signs just now. What are some signs that parents should be looking for in their children and themselves?
I think with children, you need to look really at changes in their behavior. Some children may become very tearful or express anxiety. And when that's the case, it's really important to ask children what they're understanding about COVID-19. Because there's a lot of misinformation out there, especially if you're dealing with older children that are on social media. They may be getting information from friends or other sources that is not correct. So the best way of determining whether they have misinformation is asking what they know about what's going on. And from that, you can determine whether part of the solution here is to make sure that they have accurate information and that also to let children know that they're protecting them, that you're doing everything possible, whether it's social isolation, whether it's social distancing within the family to keep them safe, and that there are a lot of people out there trying to keep everyone safe during this crisis. There are a lot of medical personnel, there are first responders, the government at the city, state, and federal level are doing a lot of things to try to keep people safe.
I like the idea of the parent themselves having a calm demeanor. That is something that I could practice personally. I have three small children at home, and sometimes that's harder than it sounds, but for the parent being modeling the behavior they want to see in their children, I think is helpful. What other positive tips or methods do you have for families during this time?
Well, I think one of the things is that to identify what is it for a parent, what is it that's causing me a lot of stress? And sometimes that is, as you said, being at home now with young children, especially for those parents that are working from home, it's hard. And if they're thinking, oh, my children are so restless, they're driving me crazy, to try to identify, you know, what are some things I can do in a concrete way to reduce that one stressor? So it may be keeping children really busy, having a lot of activities in a schedule that they can follow, rather than kind of letting children run around. The other thing that I think is really important is to limit media coverage, to turn off that television. It's interesting, there's a lot of research that's been done in the past during wartime and during disasters, and they found that children who watch the most news coverage of those disasters or war areas tend to be the most likely to have anxiety problems later on. So it's really limiting exposure. So it's not 24/7 with the television on, because children too are listening to a lot of things, especially young children. They may not understand all this, but when they start seeing, as we've seen recently, pictures from New York, of temporary morgues, things like that. I mean, that's very distressful to children. And fortunately for those of us here in Arkansas, it's not good, but it's not at the degree that it is in New York. And to talk about that when children are exposed, to say to them, you know, yes, it's really bad in other cities around the country, but in Arkansas, we don't have as many people. We're not going to have as many cases. It's not good, but it's not like it is in other places. So we can reduce some of the fears that they may have from what they see on television or on social media.
And along those lines, what other resources are available for families to address stress?
Well, there are a lot of resources out there. And one of the things I'd recommend is to really use reliable resources. There's a lot of information out there on the web as well as through social media that may not be accurate. So your best sources of information on how to deal with COVID-19, the stress and anxiety, is through sites such as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Through Arkansas Children's Hospital has a lot of information on their website for parents. Other organizations such as the American Psychological Association has information for parents and just individuals to help them cope during this difficult time. And then finally, the American Academy of Pediatrics offers a lot of good information for parents.
All right. So for parents who are at home with their teens or older children who are used to that social interaction, what advice do you have for parents for their teens or kids who are missing that social interaction with their friends? How do you keep them connected during this time?
I'm having to think about this a little bit differently because for years, we've been concerned that children spend too much time on their smart devices, computer, with social media. And at this time, that's pretty good. It really helps children feel, and teens especially, feel connected. So many teens aren't as reliant on that direct interpersonal contact as they were a generation ago. So from a positive perspective, social media is good. So they're going to maintain relationships with their friends through texting, through Facebook, Instagram, whatever the case may be. One of the things as a parent that we need to be careful of is to limit that social media. So when they're at home and they're not in school, they're not spending their whole day on their phone communicating. And again, trying to make sure as a parent that the information your child is receiving from their friends and others is accurate information. So parents really need to talk to their kids about what it is they're hearing through social media so they can correct any misconceptions that may exist.
Excellent. And kind of one of our last questions, but we definitely want to hear if you have anything else to add. Kind of going into the next couple of weeks now, what are some of your top tips for families going into, as this continues to go on, dealing with the different stress and anxiety they might be facing?
Well, I've already mentioned, you know, limiting media exposure, I think, is really important as we go through. We're going to see peaks over the next month in different areas of the country, so limiting children's exposure to that. Also remembering it's what children see rather than what you say that may be most powerful. So during the difficult times ahead over the next few weeks is to really make sure that we as parents model that calmness and that we're confident and we're protecting our children. Beyond that, I think one of the things is that parents can do and families can do is to practice gratitude. To just not talk about the crisis, but what are the things that they're grateful for and thankful for? And trying to put a positive spin on this, not in a negative way, but in a way that this is giving us an opportunity to spend more time together. And I think that's the other thing, is to look. For years, we as parents have talked about not having enough time with our children. And for many families right now, they have a lot of time. And that, while that can be difficult to manage, it's also being grateful for that time and thinking, what can we do together as a family to strengthen those relationships? You know, cooking together, having activities together, working on projects together, having that time together to deepen and strengthen those relationships that will hopefully last a lifetime. So it is an opportunity in some way to really improve families. Now, on the flip side, there are also some stressors there, and it could go the other way. And I know Dr. Farce is going to address some of those issues coming up.
Dr. Long, thank you. Thank you very much. And now we're going to hear from Dr. Karen Farst. Again, she is our medical director for Team for Children at Risk at Arkansas Children's. And Dr. Farst, you sent some material over ahead of time, so I was able to read, and things that we're seeing, of course, in the media, that it's expected that there will be an increase in abuse and domestic violence based on past events like the recession that we had about a decade ago. So how is COVID-19 and this crisis similar to the recession that we saw 10 years ago?
I think there are similarities in that it's really just a time of stress for so many families. And what Dr. Long already mentioned, we really don't know how long this is going to last. What is it? What really is the end point of this going to be? We're probably more used to dealing with natural disasters like a tornado or a hurricane, where there's just a very bad upfront event, but you know that the tornado's gone and now we're going to recover and rebuild. So similar to the Great Recession of 2009, this time is the stress that we just really don't know. And I think that adds to some of the anxiety. But now we also have some different layers piling on themselves as well. So we are unfortunately entering a really tough economic crisis. How long that's going to last, how deep it's going to be is unknown. But then to keep ourselves safe, we are social distancing. And so we are, for the most part, sheltering at home. And that can build up some of the stress that Dr. Long was talking about. And he gave some great ideas about how to think about that from the positive viewpoint of family time. But we also know realistically that there will be stressors within the home that are going to make people have anxiety, frustration, anger. And then so that's the concern when that becomes something that gets acted out by an adult onto a child in the home. Since kids aren't in school, they've lost a little bit of a barrier that school is oftentimes where kids feel safe to disclose if something's going on at school. And it also just gives them a buffer. So a lot of kids depend on school as their place to have a break if it is stressful at home. They rely on school for their meals at times as well. So we do just have kind of some different layers building on top of each other that, in and of themselves, each one of those factors can increase stress into a family. And now we have more than one thing stacking on itself. And so it is really, really concerning for people to be aware, just as Dr. Long discussed, about what they feel like individually from a stress standpoint. So they can help to try to keep things as diffused and calm and not reactive in their home as possible.
So you talked about the layers of stress, and one, of course, is the economic and financial stress. What happens when the family is faced with the financial stress and then you're confined at home? What happens?
We really don't know that because we haven't ever lived through something like this. So we have lived through the Great Recession. We've lived through natural disasters, but these certain sets of circumstances we really haven't lived through yet. We know that if you do put people together in a confined space where they don't have good either anger management, if you throw other components in there, like maybe there's substance abuse in the home or there's a history of domestic violence, and now you really kind of confine all that into a space without the somewhat protective barriers of things like being able to go to school, being able to go to church, being able to get to your job. So that is one of the big, I think, concerns right now for the future as well, is that we do have this time of really potentially increasing stress in families where there already was stress, and then add to that the economic uncertainty. And so it unfortunately does just raise our concern that kids would be at risk in those situations as well.
And I definitely want to address how you were saying that schools are a buffer and somewhat of a safe place for some kids and students. But first, I want to talk about choosing the right person to take care of your child. A lot of daycares have closed due to the crisis, and so parents who do have to work might have to make a rush decision of who will take care of their child. But what are some things to keep in mind given the desperation in the situation?
Right. And so, yes, parents could certainly be in the situation where they aren't home with their kids. They do still have work that they have to go do. So then you have to really kind of make some decisions on whether your kids are old enough and mature enough to be able to stay at home by themselves and you can check in with them by phone. Or if, obviously, if they're very young children, then they can't do that safely. So they can't really anticipate dangers or know how to contact for help when there is. And so those kids definitely should not be left alone at home. So thinking about care options, some of it's common sense, but some of it maybe is to make yourself think a little bit about who is going to be watching your child. So if it's not somebody that is already trained in how to watch kids as far as a daycare provider or a school teacher, make sure it is somebody that at least kind of maybe has some background or experience with kids. One of the most common scenarios that we'll see with kids that are coming injured is that the parent leaves the child with somebody who's very well intending and nobody that you would look at and just up front say, oh my gosh, I think that this person would be a danger to my child. But they really don't know that person just really doesn't have any experience in how frustrating it can be to take care of a child. And especially if that person has just really kind of unrealistic expectations that a child is going to be curious and exploring and maybe a little bit irritating to you as they're doing things. And so we see that with caregivers who really wanted to do the right thing, but at the same time, they really just didn't have the background to kind of know what to do when kids got to the point that it made them frustrated or made them angry. And we also unfortunately see a lot of generational discipline kind of passed along as well, that if you're going to leave your child with somebody else, make sure that they know how you feel about corporal punishment and that is not okay, that we know that does not change behavior in a positive way. We know that corporal punishment actually just brings out more bad behavior, which then just makes the cycle go on and on. So really talking about punishment, talking about does that person have experience with kids before, and really making sure that person knows how to get in touch with you. So if the kids really are getting to the point that it's causing frustration in the caregiver, that they know who to call for help.
So going back to schools and schools being a safe place, schools being somewhere where they can count on getting fed, and when you take that piece away, what could happen to the child? And I think addressing also what teachers are able to see in their students and able to report, and when you take that piece away, what could happen to a child?
Yeah, so there's different types of abuse. So physical abuse, we would oftentimes, you might see an injury that was new to a child. And that is one of the really, I think, protective things about schools is that teachers know their kids. And so they know when kids come in and are either acting different or maybe have something different that they're seeing. And so for physical abuse, a lot of times it is just that somebody else is recognizing that there's an injury on a child, or that the child may actually even say something to a trusted person or a friend at school. Sexual abuse is oftentimes perpetrated by people that know the family and have a relationship with the family. And you oftentimes can't tell by looking at a child from the outside that sexual abuse is going on. But again, teachers know their kids, and they can oftentimes tell when there's a different behavior as far as being withdrawn, missing school when they really kind of don't usually, that type of thing. And again, for sexual abuse disclosures, kids are much more likely to disclose to a trusted adult or a friend that then tells a trusted adult as they are to disclose at home. And so we do, again, kind of have this situation where kids may be confined in situations where there's stress at home, but then they also aren't really having access to the people that are oftentimes their positive influences, and the people that we know that they will be more likely to disclose that something is going on and kind of activate the system to get them safe.
So along those lines, talking about prevention of child abuse at home, speaking to families, what would you tell them? They're in a confined space and spending more time with their children maybe than they have in a long time. What are some prevention tips, techniques that you would share with a family listening?
Sure, and I think we could probably think of it as an individual and as a community. And Dr. Long has already talked about some great things about recognizing stress in yourself, recognizing stress in your kids or your other family members. And I think that awareness part of it is a huge thing, to just not let the ball continue to roll and escalate to the point that somebody loses their temper and somebody gets hurt. So just what's already been talked about, try to have some kind of structure or routine in your day. So I hear about some kids that are doing their home stuff at home, and all they have to do is check in once during the day, and then they're just kind of off doing whatever. And there's other places where they're having to like check in every period, and so there's structure to it. But kids really, and Dr. Long, you can correct me, but I think kids really do well with structure. And having an opportunity where a parent might not be used to doing that, is there something that you could tell a parent, like how do you put structure into a day if that's not what you're used to doing?
Yes, I think one of the things is to make sure during this time that things don't go haywire, that children aren't going to the bed at the same time, they're staying up later, getting up later. Try to stick to a schedule in terms of sleep and meal times that are normal. And then during the day, for young children, have activity centers and or specific things that they can work on, rather than just having a lot of unstructured time. So it could be reading time, it could be time to build something, it could be cooking time for older children that are doing distance learning from schools, to have specific times for doing assignments that are given to them, but to really try to structure that time and not let children choose when and what they want to do throughout the day.
And I think our governor and the Department of Health have done a great job messaging, too, that social distancing doesn't necessarily mean that we have to be isolated, per se. So as an individual, we need to recognize what's going on within our homes, but be aware of what's going on in your community and your neighborhood as well. So this is a great time to reach out to neighbors and see if there's something that you can do to help. And just to, again, kind of have this lens to know that people are going to be feeling stress in a different way than they ever have in their lives. And if you can kind of be somebody that rallies your neighborhood to watch out for each other, again, we need to keep all of our rules in place as far as not getting a big group gathering where we're violating our social distancing. But we can do, some small group play stuff outside. So maybe some different people in the neighborhood could team up. And so maybe one mom gets a break while somebody else gets to watch. So just being, kind of creative from that standpoint, too. But then, you know, the hard thing as well to talk about is that if you see something in a child that you think is abuse, is to call the hotline and let somebody look into that. I know that can be a really hard thing to do, but especially since we don't really have that layer right now of school, that actually does put a little extra burden on us as just individuals in our communities to watch out for what's going on in the homes near us, in our communities, in our neighborhoods. Because there unfortunately are going to be situations where stress overflows into abuse and violence in the home.
And that was of course, one of our questions was reporting abuse. As you see your neighbors more out and about, and I definitely have, if someone has never reported abuse before, what is the, I guess, the easiest way for them to do that? And how confidential is it? And how should they report abuse if they think they see it?
Sure. So Arkansas has a child abuse hotline. You can definitely be anonymous. You can choose to give your identity if you want to, but you can call and just be totally anonymous. When you call, they will ask you first where you're located. So they'll want to know your county. They'll want to know the address of where the child is, because that's one of the first things that they will want to do is respond and make sure that that child is safe. If you don't know the exact street number, like the house number, at least if you can get streets and cross streets and describe that to them. But I think some people get frustrated when they call the hotline because the hotline starts to ask them a lot of demographic questions up front and they just want to say what is worrying them. But there's really a purpose to that because they have to be able to try to go locate this child and this family. And so hang in there with them while they ask you all that question. And then they'll ask you, so what's your concern? And then you can be able to describe that to them. They're really trying to gather all the information that they can to have an adequate response when you call. But yes, you can certainly be anonymous, and you don't have to know for sure that it is abuse. We call when there's a suspicion, and then it's really up to the folks that respond from either Department of Children and Family Services or Arkansas State Police. It's up to them to really decide if it's something that has risen to the level of abuse. So I would just encourage people to call. If there's not enough information for them to take the report, they'll tell you that. But it doesn't hurt to call if you do think something is wrong, because that may be the only opportunity, it may be the only window that actually gets somebody to the point that they could do a response and help that child.
Well, good. And you always hear, if you see something, say something, no matter how big or little it might seem, it might save a child's life. So Dr. Farce, thank you for your time and your insight on this. Is there anything else that you would like to add that would be helpful for our families during this time?
I think just so accessing the hotline, it actually has a pretty easy mnemonic to remember it. It's 1-844-SAVE-A-CHILD. Or you can also you can Google it as well, Arkansas State Child Abuse Hotline. So there's different ways to get at it, but it is a toll-free number. I appreciate the chance to talk. I know this is a tough topic to talk about. I appreciate people listening in because I know it's not something we necessarily want to think about. But again, I would reflect back to a lot of the positive things that Dr. Long brought up as well, as far as really looking at this as the opportunity to kind of discover some different things about your family and kind of grow in a different way that you haven't had a chance to before.
Dr. Farce and Dr. Long, thank you for your time today. I think although this is a difficult topic, this is something that as champions for children, we have to talk about. So again, April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and Dr. Long addressed some positive ways that we can address stress as a family, addressing that it is going to happen, but ways to handle it in a positive way. And Dr. Farce definitely gave some tips and insight into what happens when there is stress in families and the negative side effects. But there is help out there. There's hotline numbers. There are ways to prevent and report child abuse to keep children in Arkansas safe during this COVID-19 crisis and beyond. So thank you for your time today, and thank you for listening. Thank you, Dr. Farce and Dr. Long, for coming on the podcast and discussing this invaluable information during this unsure time. We hope this provided some comfort, help, and insight on what you and your family can do during the COVID-19 outbreak that can keep your kids mentally and physically balanced. Once again, a massive thank you to all of the healthcare workers in all corners of the world for the care and healing you are bringing to patients and families. Grateful doesn't even begin to describe our level of appreciation for you. We are in awe of you more than ever. Thank you again for listening to the Live, Learn, and Play podcast. Hoping you and your family are remaining safe and healthy, and tune in next time for a brand new episode. Until then, wash your hands, stay safe, and we will all get through this together.